Avanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jayam Vishnupaya Paramahamsa Parivraja Kacharya Shuddhara Shuddhashi Shimari Sivayam Grace Shila Prabhupada Ki. Gantara Shima Bhagavatam Ki Gaudra Pramandi. All glories to the Assembled Devotees. All glories to Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga. Om Aknana Tamirandasya Tignananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupakadamayam Dadati Swabhadantikam Vancha Kalpaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyarevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare O Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya O Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. O Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 8, Text Number 18, is it? Yeah, 18. Davantarir Bhagavan Patvapatyad Dvandvad Bhayarishabho Nirjitatma Jagyashchalokad Avataj Janantad Baloganat Krodha Vashad Ahindra. Hare Krishna. Danvantarir Bhagavan Patvapatyad Dvandvad Bhayarishabho Nirjitatma Yagyashchalokad Avatajjanantad Baloganat Krodavashad Ahindra Dhamvantarir Bhagavan Patvapatyad Dvandvad Bhayad Rishabho Nirjitatma Yagyashchalokad Avatajjanantad Baloganat Krodavashad Ahindra. Mothers Devantarir Bhagavan Patvapatyad Dvandvad Bhayad Rishabho Nirjitatma Yagyashchalokad Avatajjanantad Balokanat krodha vashat ahindra devantari. The incarnation devantari, the physician. Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Patu, may he protect me. Apatyat, from things injurious to the health, such as meat and intoxicants. Dvandvat, from duality. Bhayat, from fear. Rishabha, Lord Rishabhadev. Nirjita Atma, who fully controlled his mind and self. Yagya, Yagya. Cha, and Lokat, from the defamation of the populace. Avatat, may he protect. Jana Antat, from dangerous positions created by other people. Bala, Lord Balaram. Ganat, from the hordes of. Krodha Vashat, the angry serpents. Ahindra, Lord Balaram in the form of the serpent Sheshanaga. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Translation, may the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his incarnation as Davantari relieve me from undesirable eatables and protect me from physical illness. May Lord Rishabhadev, who conquered his inner and outer senses, protect me from fear produced by the duality of heat and cold. May Yagya protect me from defamation and harm from the populace. And may Lord Balaram Eshesha protect me from envious serpents. Purport, to live within this material world, one must face many dangers as described herein. For example, undesirable food possesses a danger to health, and therefore one must give up such food. The Devantari incarnation can protect us in this regard. Since Lord Vishnu is the Supersoul of all living entities, if he likes, he can save us from adibhotika, disturbances from other living entities. Lord Balaram and the Shesha incarnation, Lord Balaram is the Shesha incarnation, and therefore he can save us from angry serpents or envious persons who are always ready to attack. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So the Narayan Kavacha mantra is now being taught to Lord Indra. The word Kavacha literally means shield. So Indra is learning a shield by which he'll be protected from all sorts of dangerous positions. Of course, the reason for which he is wanting to learn this Kavacha mantra is so that he can be protected from the dangers of the demons when he goes to repossess his material opulences. So his motivation is not exactly a spiritual one. A devotee also prays for protection, just like we say this prayer, Krishna, 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 Rakshamam, Payimam. These are all expressions asking the Lord for protection. But the devotional approach to protection is to protect my consciousness from the various disturbances of material nature, which kind of tends to compel us towards material absorption. So it is not really a protection, please protect my opulence, please protect my house, please protect my wealth and my wife too, and so on. It's not that sort of prayer, but a protection for one's consciousness as he's sojourning through the material world, so that the material world doesn't attract his attention towards total absorption in it, which of course leads to repeated birth and death. So although Indra's approach is material, the Kavacha that he is chanting is spiritual. It's possessed of the names of the Lord, so it will provide protection. So in the first few of these prayers, he was praying for protection, you know, from the water, the land, and the sky. Then the acharyas point out that the next set of prayers, he was praying for protection from the obstacles created by oneself or created by other living entities. And four verses. So verses 16, we already did these verses yesterday. But in verses 16, 17, today's verse and the next verse, he's praying for protection from the obstacles created by oneself and by other living entities. Understand? There are obstacles created by oneself. Generally, that's called as adhyatmika klesha. There are obstacles created by one's own mind and body. And then there are obstacles created by other living entities. So in four prayers, he's praying to the Supreme Lord in this kavacha for protection from the obstacles created by oneself and by other living entities. Understand? Understanding? Okay. So in this verse, he's praying to Devantari to be protected from the poisons that can come from undesirable foodstuffs. He's praying to Lord Rishabdeh to be protected from the fear that is caused by material duality. Material duality causes a state of fear. I always like to say that the experience of duality is like a setup. Just like when you experience happiness, that happiness is sort of like a setup for the next experience that's coming shortly thereafter in the form of distress. I often like to give the example of a tea and with children. When they're teaching children how to play baseball, and they just put the ball on top of what they call a tee, I believe they call it a tee, and they just sit the ball on top of the tee, and then the kids can just take a really good swing at it, and then it's the way he learns how to play baseball. You know this? You have this experience, maybe? So similarly, happiness is like that tee. It's just like a setup for when the bat of the stress is going to come and knock us out. Basically, it's kind of a... Duality is like this. So you experience... You experience the positive only to be approached by the negative in the very next moment. And this way, one's consciousness is stolen away by the experience of duality. So now he's praying to Lord Rishabdeh to be protected from the fear created by the experience of duality, which is very... The fear is that it causes absorption, which causes repeated birth and death, right? Just like you get so absorbed in... For example, someone calls you a bad name. Have you ever been called a bad name before? Or someone's talking smack behind your back? As we may express, you have this experience, right? What happens to your consciousness? You get absorbed in that. It could suck up your consciousness for like half the day. You know, I heard so-and-so said this about you. What? And the whole day, you'll be thinking on that. Next morning, you're chanting japa. You're thinking about that only, looking at the devotee. In this way, this is the fear caused by duality. It causes absorption of the consciousness, which leads to repeated birth and death. So that's a problem. So here he's praying to Rishabdeh for protection from that fear that arises due to duality. He prays to Yajna for protection from defamation. It is said that only thing that lives longer than us is our reputation. Reputation is such a thing that it continues to exist even after you don't exist. In terms of short-term and long-term, short-term I mean you may come in contact with someone for 5 seconds, but the impression left by that contact can last for a very long time. So like on book distribution, you meet someone and it wasn't a very nice exchange. And so the impression left by the exchange lasts with that person for a long, long time. So much so that if he sees the devotees in the future, he remembers that particular incident and is prevented from taking advantage of the opportunity of association. For example, so reputation is practically one's most precious thing in this world. In the Bali Maharaj pastime, this is kind of one of the messages that comes, that the one's reputation, and Krishna himself argues for maintaining one's reputation. When he's giving a materialistic argument in Bhagavad Gita chapter 2, but he argues that your reputation will be sullied if you don't fight in the war. And for a Kshatriya like yourself, this is worse than death. And I was always thinking, why only a Kshatriya? For us also, if our reputation becomes sullied in some way, it is very embarrassing. And in a lot of instances, when you're a part of a community, if your reputation gets sullied, you feel like you can no longer exist in that community because everyone knows about some particular defect in your character and so on. And so people go away, such as the impact of one's reputation in one's life. So here he's praying the Yajna to be free from defamation, because that can be very, it can be dangerous, it can be discouraging, etc., cause depression. And he's also praying to Lord Balaram to be protected from serpents. Prabhupada expands the idea by saying serpents are serpent-like persons who are envious. He's praying for the protection from such entities. Again, these set of prayers in the kavacha are praying for protection from the obstacles created by oneself and others. So that's the flow of these verses. Are there any questions about this particular statement? I was going to read a whole bunch of verses. It's very simple. Yeah. Oh, the Krishna, 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 Rakshama, Krishna, 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 Paima, Rama, Raghava, Rama, Raghava, Rama, Raghava, Raghava.
He was, he, you know, they would.
Can you turn the microphone on? Sorry, can you? Oh.
They would retrieve, they would sell books to the soldiers, you know, going to the USO, and then there'd be a big stack of books in there on a bookshelf, you know, all different types, Bhagavatams, Gitas, and stuff. And so this one officer came, and he was reading this invocation of the Krishna book out loud, and he couldn't pronounce it very well, but he was very emphatic, and he was expressing himself to a bunch of soldiers. He says, "This is a sign of madness. This is the introduction to their book." So please be very careful and do not take any of their books. Because I remember him trying to say that prayer. You know, it was really something that stuck in my mind.
This is a sign of madness. Krishna, 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 Krishna. We've gone mad. Well, there's truth to that. Lord Chaitanya was traveling in South India singing that mantra. And he was certainly mad. Man in love of God. Okay, any other questions? Anything anyone wants to ask or contribute to this? No, then maybe we'll go to the next verse. Text number 19. Dvaipayano Bhagavan aprabodhad Buddhastupashandagana pramadhat Koki kale kalamalat prapatu Dharma vanayoru kritavatara. Translation for poor Bhashvila Prabhupada ki jai. May the personality of Godhead and his incarnation as Vyasadeva protect me from all kinds of ignorance resulting from the absence of Vedic knowledge. May Lord Buddhadev protect me from activities opposed to Vedic principles and from laziness that causes one to madly forget the Vedic principles of knowledge and ritualistic action. May Kalki Dev, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who appeared as an incarnation to protect religious principles, protect me from the dirt of the age of Kali. Okay, purport. This verse mentions various incarnations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead who appear for various purposes. Srila Vyasadeva Mahamuni compiled the Vedic literature for the benefit of all human society. If one wants to be protected from the reactions of ignorance, even in this age of Kali, one may consult the books left by Srila Vyasadeva, namely the four Vedas, Sama, Yajur, Rig, and Atharva, the 108 Upanishads, Vedanta Sutra, Brahma Sutra, Mahabharata, Srimad Bhagavatam, Mahapurana, Vyasadeva's commentary on the Brahma Sutra, and the other 17 Puranas. Only by the mercy of Srila Vyasadeva do we have so many volumes of transcendental knowledge to save us from the clutches of ignorance. As described by Srila Goswami in his Dashavatara Stotra, Lord Buddha apparently decried the Vedic knowledge. Nindasi yagya vidur aha shruti jatam sadaya hridaya darshita pashugatam keshavadrita buddha sharira jaya jagadisha hare. The mission of Lord Buddha was to save people from the abominable activity of animal killing and to save the poor animals from being unnecessarily killed. When Pashandis were cheating by killing animals on the plea of sacrificing them in the Vedic yagyas, the Lord said, quote, if the Vedic injunctions allow animal killing, I do not accept the Vedic principles. End quote. Thus, he actually saved people who acted according to Vedic principles, or so-called acted according to Vedic principles. One should therefore surrender to Lord Buddha so that he can help one avoid misusing the injunctions of the Vedas. The Kalki avatar is the fierce incarnation who vanquishes the class of the atheists born in this age of Kali. And now, in the beginning of Kali Yuga, many irreligious principles are in effect, and as Kali Yuga advances, many pseudo-religious principles will certainly be introduced, and people will forget the real religious principles enunciated by Lord Krishna before the beginning of Kali Yuga, namely principles of surrender unto the lotus feet of the Lord. Unfortunately, because of Kali Yuga, foolish people do not surrender to the lotus feet of Krishna. Even most people who claim to belong to the Vedic system of religion are actually opposed to the Vedic principles. Every day, they manufacture a new type of dharma on the plea that whatever one manufactures is also a path of liberation. Atheistic men generally say, yata mata tata pat. According to this view, there are hundreds and thousands of different opinions in human society, and each opinion is a valid religious principle. This philosophy of rascals has killed the religious principles mentioned in the Vedas, and such philosophies will become increasingly influential as Kali Yuga progresses. In the last stage of Kali Yuga, Kalki Dev, the fierce incarnation of Keshava, will descend to kill all the atheists and will save only the devotees of the Lord. Yay! I guess we should become a devotee. So three personalities are being mentioned in this verse. Again, these verses are asking for protection from the obstacles created by oneself and by other living entities. In this verse, the mantra is invoking three personalities, Vyasadeva, Buddha, and Kalki. So it's praying to Vyasadeva that we be protected from the effects of ignorance. The basic effect of ignorance is suffering. One who is ignorant has to suffer, isn't it? And the converse would be true. Those who are in knowledge, being in knowledge or possessing wisdom, they do not have to suffer. So knowledge is connected to happiness. We hear about the mode of goodness. So mode of goodness means knowledge and happiness. Because of knowledge, one can experience happiness, and the converse is also true. Because of ignorance, one has to suffer, isn't it? Prabhupada would often give the example, just because a child doesn't know that fire will burn, doesn't mean that he will be protected from the burn if he touches fire, the burning experience. So ignorance is a cause of suffering. So in the age of Kali, people are suffering because they have no knowledge. And knowledge, of course, here refers to knowledge of the difference between matter and spirit. Like in the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna is just on the verge of having a very horrible experience in the form of death in a very intense sort of way. As I often like to describe, the ego death is a very prominent experience throughout the course of our existence in this world in any particular body. And what I mean by ego death is that our sense of identity is often marked out by our sense of what is ours, right? So a mother is called a mother because she has a daughter, isn't it? Excuse me. Isn't it? A mother is called as such. Before she has a daughter, she was called as daughter herself, isn't it? She was called as daughter or woman. And then when the same woman has a child, she is called as mother, isn't it? Now what happens if that mother loses her child prematurely? Let's say the child dies at young age. Then what is she called? That's an interesting question. I always get this awkward silence. Then what is she called after that? Huh? Suffering mother. In the strictest sense, and objectively speaking, she is not really mother anymore because the daughter isn't there. But her sense of identity as mother remains. Although the actual reality is such that she isn't a mother anymore, per se, in terms of actually having to care for a child and so on. So this is an experience of an ego death, because the child brought in a certain egoistic conception of self, now that I'm a mother. And then the child was prematurely taken away, and that causes a rift in the sense of identity. And then the result of that is one suffers, right? You understand this particular point? So Arjuna is about to have such a massive experience of this in the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Right, everything that he considers mine, especially in terms of his relationships, is about to be perished in one swipe, practically speaking. Of course, besides Krishna, the Pandavas. And so such an experience is certainly suffering. You understand? Just like when you have a certain talent and you lose that talent because of some, suppose you have your health and you become sick, then what happens to you? You feel miserable, isn't it? You have some relationship, many of you must be having before Krishna consciousness, loving relationships, isn't it? Many loving relationships were there. For some of you, I bet many were there, isn't it? Many. And then you lose that relationship, then what happens? You suffer tremendously. You say, I'll never do this again. Of course, 2 weeks later, you go to a bar or something like this. Again, new loving relationship is established. And this way, this experience of ego death is happening through the course of our life, and the experience of such ego death is certainly suffering. Arjuna is about to encounter such a suffering experience in one swipe. It's going to be very devastating. So how does Krishna help him to get out of this suffering condition? This is a point. He gives him wisdom that the soul is actually different from the body. The way the sense of how you think of yourself is not the actual truth of what the self is. So by giving him wisdom of the actual situation, he's trying to help Arjuna come out of the experience of grief created by this ego death experience and come out of it with new life, with new inspiration and invigoration. Understand? You understand my point? The suffering that was created by ignorance, thinking that a false sense of self is a true self, is counteracted by wisdom that this is not the true self, basically in simple language. So then to counteract the ignorance of Kali Yuga is created by the lack of knowledge of the self being different from the body and mind. Especially the mind. Many people can understand that they're not their bodies. Many people can understand that theoretically, but to understand one is not one's mind. The seat of emotions and experiences, that is very difficult, isn't it? Just like when you get angry, you say, I am angry, isn't it? You don't feel that it is your mind that is having that condition. My mind is angry. You feel like that? You think like that? My mind is angry. My mind is lusty. You don't feel like that. You think, I am angry, I am lusty, isn't it? These are actually conditions created by the mind. And when the self identifies with the mind, he thinks that these transformations of the mental states are happening to him. Actually, nothing can happen to the soul because the soul is eternal. So the eternal means it's free from these sorts of transformations. Otherwise, it's not eternal. Something that's eternal always was and always will be ever the same without any change whatsoever. Right? Krishna says that in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, that of the sat, there is no change, and of that which is asat, there is no endurance. So then, for there to be these transformations of the mental states means it's something that belongs to the realm of asat. So when the soul identifies with that, he thinks that these transformations are happening to him. And the result of that identification is he suffers. Understand? So one can be free from the suffering by the wisdom that is gained by the Vedic knowledge given by Vyasadeva. So to be protected from ignorance and the suffering that follows ignorance, one should take advantage of the Vedic literatures given by Vyasadeva, especially Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam. Do Upanishads and other literature that are mentioned that we don't generally encourage people to read because we require a lot of qualifications for those. But the idea is like this. Understand? In the conditioned stage, the mind and consciousness are non-different. No, they are different, but in the conditioned state, the consciousness is identifying with the mental state. They're still different. Just like when you identify with a movie. Have you ever watched a really good movie and you really kind of identify with the characters in the movie? So much so that whatever is happening to that character is happening to you. They start crying, you start crying. Isn't it? You had that experience? Good movie like that? Or they get scared, you get scared. They get lusty, you get lusty. You have such experience watching a good movie like that? It doesn't mean that at any point you become the character in that movie. But by identification, you're having experience as such. So similarly, this consciousness never becomes the mental state at any point. They are eternally, ontologically different forever. But by identification, the soul is influenced by the transformation of the mental states. And the mind is thinking this is happening to the self. And so in that way, one becomes bewildered and continues on the realm of samsara. Understand? This one is very hard to realize, actually, that I'm not the mind. That's very difficult. As soon as some feeling comes up, then you identify with it, isn't it? And you act accordingly. So that can be counteracted by the wisdom gained from the Vedic literatures, either by hearing or by study, and or by study. Generally, in the age of Kali, many of us don't have the capacity to study the wisdom traditions very deeply or profoundly. Just like devotees, we often suggest to everyone to try to get an hour of reading or something like that. But most people, I suspect at least, I suspect a lot of us don't always get that much out of our hour reading. We read kind of like animals, just like getting in, you know. You read and then you make sure, okay, I'm starting at 8:03. Isn't it? I suspect that it is like this. And then as soon as I get my hour, okay, hour is up, I did it. I accomplished my hour reading like I was supposed to, like a good sadhaka. And then you ask the person, what is it that you understood? What is it that you learned? They cannot tell you anything also, isn't it? Many, actually. I ask all the time devotees, what is it that you... They say, I see they're reading something. I say, okay, what are you learning? The process of self-realization. You know, some very vague term that, about Krishna consciousness. What does that mean? I suspect that many people... It's due to the influence of the age of Kali, many of us are... have mental states that are quite dull, actually. Dulled by, of course, birth in Kali Yuga, dulled by our previous life of drug addiction, sex life, and so on. And so the mind's ability to capture these sort of topics is very hard, because they're very subtle. So subtle things require a subtle mentality, a subtle state, in order to understand. And many of us just don't possess that subtleness. Therefore, even if we read something, we don't get anything. Like sometimes people read Prabhupada's books. They say Prabhupada is saying the same thing every purport. He is saying you are not this body, every purport. That is the only thing they say. Actually, Prabhupada is saying so much more than that. But that's the only thing that we can understand. And that too, we also are not understanding properly, I'm sure. But that's the only thing that we're able to pick up because of our incapacity to actually absorb more. So one has to gain this wisdom, either by study, and in the case of we can't study, then by hearing and inquiry. One has to hear from proper sources and inquire. Otherwise, one has to experience suffering on the account of ignorance, on account of the beginningless identification with the material nature. That's Vyasadeva, understand? Then a prayer is offered to Lord Buddha. The prayer that is offered, the language is used by here, Prabhupada says that, as described by Srila Jayadeva Goswami in his Dashvatara Shrotra, Lord Buddha apparently decried the Vedic literature. Apparently decried the Vedic literature. So Prabhupada is making this idea here that actually Lord Buddha didn't really decry the Vedic literature. In fact, I think generally the philosophy is called non-theistic, not atheistic. Although a lot of the modern applications of Buddhism is kind of atheistic, they say that there is no God, there is no soul. But Buddha didn't actually make any comments about God or the soul. He never really discussed it. He more or less discussed ethics. The idea here is that during the time in which Buddha appeared, people in the name of the Vedas were doing sacrifices, killing animals barbarically, and doing other things that were actually against the principles of the Vedic culture. So although apparently adopting the practices of Vedic culture, they were not understanding the principle behind the practice. In that way, that practice became degraded and destructive. So they were killing animals excessively. So then Lord Buddha came to decry the practices of the Vedic culture in order to establish the principle. Such an example, a principle be like the principle of compassion. So in the Vedic sacrifices, traditionally as they were followed in other ages, when they would apparently sacrifice an animal, the animal will come out with new life. Or in certain instances, I think it was mentioned that an animal could be promoted to the human form of life also. In certain instances, I think this is mentioned. So behind the practices of the Vedic culture, which apparently look, brutal on the surface level, had a deeper principle behind it. Not understanding the deeper principle, but only seeing the brutal acts, people were engaging in such practices. And that way, the practices were becoming degraded. So Lord Buddha came to decry such practices in order to establish the real principle, such as the principle of compassion, and more or less ethical things, things in the mode of goodness. Not very transcendental or spiritual, but ethical. So Lord Buddha came to establish that. So he apparently decried these principles. So here, Prabhupada's translating and in the purport discussing, that one can pray to Lord Buddha for being protected from misunderstanding of the actual principles and the application of their practice, their religious practice. Understand? There's a religious practice and there's a principle behind the religious practice. Oftentimes in Kali Yuga especially, religious traditions argue because of their differences in the practices without seeing the unifying principles that underscore them. or underpin them, I should say, rather. And that way a lot of quarreling goes on, either quarreling with other groups or quarreling within oneself, where one sees a particular religious practice and they can't understand why one is adopting that. Just like, for example, in our tradition, offering obeisances to the deity or to Srila Prabhupada, many people feel very uncomfortable when they see us do that, especially to Srila Prabhupada. They can understand that we're a little crazy and we think that these are the Supreme Lord himself. But then we say that this is not the Supreme Lord. Srila Prabhupada is not God. And yet they see us offering obeisances to Prabhupada, doing Guru Puja, dancing and jumping in front of Prabhupada. And they think this is very crazy because they don't understand the principle behind the practice. So they cannot appreciate the practice itself. They become bewildered in seeing that activity. Or certain times, new devotees, they become bewildered to see that we're worshiping a man. But then when you hear Prabhupada explain the principle behind worship of the Guru, then it makes perfect sense. And then the religious practice makes perfect sense. But then when one tries to apply a religious practice without understanding the principle, then that practice degrades. So the idea is that one can pray to Lord Buddha. For all this, you can pray to Krishna only. No need to go to Buddha and Kalki and so on. But the idea being expressed here, one prays to Lord Buddha for protection from the degradation that follows religious practice without understanding the principles behind them. And oftentimes, it is true that people feel satisfied with just their religious practice. They don't care for understanding. And that way, their practices degrade very rapidly. So one can pray to Buddha for that. Understand? Any question about that? Any? Then last point is being prayed to Kalki. One is praying to Kalki here for the contamination that comes from manufacturing religious principles. Prabhupada here speaks about yatamat tatapat. Generally, nowadays, people give more importance to their emotional states than they give to religious principles. This is actually what Krishna refers to in chapter 2 of Bhagavad Gita as anarya jushtam. Anarya jushtam, according to the Purport Prabhupada gives there for us, who is an Aryan, not the Germans who call themselves Aryan. Who is an Aryan? An Aryan is a person who gave predilection to religious principles over the emotional states. So I may feel something, but if the religious principle, Dharma, is telling me to do something, I execute it despite the way I feel about it. This is called as an Aryan. And then, so the exact opposite of an Aryan, Anarya Jushtam, is one who gives greater predilection to his emotional state than to the religious principle that is guiding his activity. Understand? So in the age of Kali, no one gives importance to religious principles, again, because they don't understand the religious principles, as I mentioned beforehand. So they don't give importance to an example that's something that disturbs an egalitarian culture like our own today. The separation of men and women is a big disturbance for a lot of people when they come to our temples. Many times the high school students, they come, or college students, they ask, why do you separate the men and girls? So usually, I used to answer this question by saying, why do we separate the boys' bathroom and the girls' bathroom? I thought that was a pretty good rebuttal. But nowadays, they have bathrooms that are co-ed bathrooms, especially because in light of a new thing that you don't see discussed so clearly in Vedic culture, like transgender. Like in Northwestern, I just saw the newspaper, Northwestern just established these co-ed bathrooms. Or they call them gender-neutral bathrooms. Gender-neutral bathrooms. Because there are persons who are either asexual, they're gender-neutral. They don't identify as this gender or that gender. And so they establish these gender-neutral bathrooms. And they're hoping they'll be able to establish them across the board. Now, of course, that makes a lot of sense for persons who are having that type of psychology. But what about persons who don't have that type of psychology? They very much identify as a particular gender. And they have these gender-neutral bathrooms. And suppose all the bathrooms were gender-neutral. And you have a person who's not gender-neutral going into such a gender-neutral bathroom along with other persons. And that can create great complications, actually, isn't it? So then this way, of course, it's an egalitarian culture. So they consider this a glorious accomplishment now that we're able to have gender-neutral bathrooms. We're able to have this equality. But along with that equality, there are so many other problems that are going to come up now because everyone is not having such an identity by which that becomes a useful formula. So sometimes people ask us why the separation is there. And because there's a religious principle that's guiding the particular activities that we're doing. Not appreciating that religious principle, not understanding it, they want to discard it and they want to go with what feels right, what feels proper. So giving predilection to their opinion, so many ideas, so many philosophies, so much spirituality comes up. The spirituality is simply based on what I feel is the truth. Yatama tatapa. I feel this, and now it becomes a spirituality. And especially if you have a lot of charisma, then you can propagate your feelings to a lot of people, and they say, I feel that too. And that way it becomes a new tradition, a new spirituality. Therefore, you go to the Barnes & Noble or one of these books, and you store it, and you see this shelf of just so many spiritual books, like the New Age section. You don't know where to start. And then when you read the books, all the books are saying, I think this, I think that, I think this, I feel that. Don't you feel that too? And that way it's all about emotion. Nothing is about religious principles coming from God. Dharmantu sakshat Bhagavan pranita. In fact, if you come and say Krishna says this, or Srila Prabhupada says it, no one will appreciate. I remember the devotee that attracted me to Krishna consciousness, his name was Atma, Dominique. He was like kind of like a Mayavadi, so he used to speculate a lot. He really valued his speculations. And I also valued his speculations in the beginning because it was superior spiritual wisdom than I myself possessed at the time. After I read SSR, I got really into Srila Prabhupada. So whenever I would go hang out with him thereafter, I was always saying, Srila Prabhupada says this. Srila Prabhupada says that. Srila Prabhupada says this. And that used to really irritate him like anything. He said, forget what Srila Prabhupada says. What do you think? And then I said, Srila Prabhupada said we shouldn't say like that. Because that's mental speculation, you know? And it used to really irritate him after I got into Prabhupada like that. I was always quoting Prabhupada, or Krishna says this, Srila Prabhupada says that, Bhagavad Gita says that. Generally, persons who give greater predilection to their emotional state don't appreciate authoritative statements. Although half the time they don't realize that the statements they are making are coming from other places. They think that they have themselves come up with this sort of ideas themselves, but actually it's impossible. Whatever thought that we're thinking are actually due to the impressions that we've gained from outside experiences in this life or previous lives. So it's actually completely impossible to be like totally self-inspired. Even the inspirations coming from the mental states are just the influence of some scars from previous lives or this life. So, but then people don't acknowledge that reality, primarily because they don't even know that. They think that the thoughts are coming up, they call it inspiration. Half the time is not inspiration. There is such a phenomenon in material nature called inspiration coming from the supersoul. But half of it is never usually inspiration. It's just samskaras that come up suddenly. Just like sometimes you have a samskara, something really abominable. Have any of you ever had that experience where something comes into mind that's like really abominable that you couldn't even tell your best friend that you were thinking that? You have such experience? Something that's like really just far out nasty. You're just like, you also become bewildered because you've never done anything like this in this life. You're wondering, how did that come to mind also? Because in previous life, definitely we were demons, no doubt. And we were doing all sorts of demonic activities. So that demonic activity creates an impression in the mind. And in future birth, it just comes, springs up out of nowhere, so to speak. Because the mind is like a storehouse of impressions. So any experience that you've had is held within the mind. And then suddenly, given certain circumstances, the impressions just come up. And it may not have anything to do with this particular life. And that way you have all sorts of crazy thoughts coming up. So similarly, people think that their feelings about things are very deeply spiritual. And they're coming from a self-inspired state of spirituality. Oftentimes they're thinking that way. But oftentimes it's just some scars coming to the surface. And then based on that some scar, they're propounding a particular understanding. So here one is praying to Kalki for freedom from the bewilderment that comes to giving so much predilection to my emotional state that I can't value the actual authority of God, which is establishing real religious principles. Now, a lot of people won't appreciate that in the modern day because they don't have faith in God. Or they think that the religious principles propounded are all man-made, and the God that we hear about in the very sacred texts are all God either man-made or man-manipulated. And therefore, valuing that, their opinion is as good as valuing my own, because they're both man-made. And that way people don't appreciate this. This is one of the bewilderments of the age of Kali. And so one prays to Kalki for the protection from this bewilderment. This one is a profound one. This one is very hard to get over, in fact. So then, these are the prayers here, two verses. Any questions about this one? Okay, 1, 2, 3. Yeah.
I have a few questions. Thank you for your class, but I'll try to just keep down to like one or two. To go back to this topic about the mind identifying, the consciousness identifying with the particular state of the mind, and then thinking, this is me. We also hear that the two facets of the false ego is one thinks of himself as the controller and enjoyer. So could you explain how that influences the identification with the mind? And is it even possible to give up that identification without first letting go of this idea that I'm the controller and enjoyer?
Well, basically, the idea that I'm a controller and enjoyer, false ego, that just gives you the conceptual orientation towards reality. I am the controller, I am the enjoyer. Now, how to control, how to enjoy, that's what the mind's going to do, right? You have the identity, I am the controller, I am the enjoyer. And what the mind will do is tell you how you can do that now. You can control in this way, you can enjoy in this way. And the mental states will transform in terms of how you can enjoy, how you can control more effectively. So there's, again, the term used in the Shastras is antakarna, the inner body, the internal subtle body, the psychic body. Sometimes I use the word psychic body. There is one body but with these three facets. So with the false ego, I am the controller, I am the enjoyer, and now the mind will function according to how to enjoy, how to control. Now, if you change your egoistic concept, you start to have an ego. Now, this is also ego. When you have to start to develop the egoistic conception of oneself as a servant, which may not be this, the pure spiritual ego of the soul, but in view of cultivating such a pure spiritual ego, then the mind will also start to function accordingly. So I am not the enjoyer, I am not the controller, but I am the servant. Then the type of forms that the mental state takes will be according to that conception, as that conception becomes stronger and stronger and stronger. So for us, through Krishna conscious practice, we start to cultivate the idea that I'm a servant of Krishna. It is not the real service mentality of the spiritual state, because that to get that sort of service ego is transcendental. The real service abhimana that relates to Krishna is transcendental. It's called bhava. But in our state, it's a state of cultivation. We're trying to cultivate this service ego. So we start identifying ourselves as servants of Krishna. And we start trying to strengthen that identity through activities of service to Krishna. By that practice, then the way the mental states will take shape will be according to that cultivation. And that way we use our subtle body to help us gain real Krishna consciousness like that. Does it make sense? Just to say one day to hear that I'm a servant, and then to think I am the servant of Krishna is not a spiritual conception yet. It can't be. We haven't made spiritual advancement. But it's the seed in which we will develop our spirituality. You know, this we can generally call it the seed of faith, by which now I have the faith that I'm a servant of Krishna. My mind is not convinced. My subtle body is totally in the spirit of enjoyment. But now I have the faith that I'm a servant of Krishna, gained from association with devotees. Now with that faith, I start trying to strengthen that self-conception through activities of Krishna consciousness. And that way we start to control the sort of shapes the mental states take. Does that make sense? All right. So, all right, you want to say something?
Mm-hmm. Thank you for class. We talked about emotions, point on emotions first before religious principles. But should we put
the microphone? Can you put the microphone a little closer so we can?
We should put some attention to our emotions because we might get too comfortable or too uncomfortable. So just wondering how much attention should we put towards our emotions?
So the question is, we do have emotional experiences. We can't just reject them or deny them. Even if you try, you can't. The emotions, I always like to say that the mental states are like a little kid that wants to get your attention. Even if you try to ignore them, you know, the kid's trying to get the attention of their mom. So the mom's like having a conversation with someone else, and then the little kid is just like, until their mom. So the mental states are like that. You can try to neglect it, which Prabhupada speaks about this in certain places, but the mental states keep pressing you until you give proper attention. What do we do with the emotional states that come up, and how do we engage them so that they help us develop Krishna consciousness? The basic, like for example, in the Nectar Instruction, it speaks about anger. So how can anger be used? Anger can be used to chastise the non-devotees who offend other devotees or Krishna, that the emotion of anger can be used on ourselves also, which is probably the proper starting point. And usually anger directed towards ourselves is called repentance or regret for something that we've done. So in other words, we have to try to, Narottam Das Thakur speaks about this in his Prema Bhakti Chandrika, how we can use the various emotional states to assist our Krishna consciousness. So we have a tendency to be greedy. We can be greedy for the hearing the topics of Krishna. Understand? Now, if we have lust, we can use that energy that we would normally engage in our lusty activities, engage in the activities of Krishna consciousness. In this way, Narottam Das Thakur speaks about these various emotional states. So we have to see how our emotions can be used in Krishna consciousness. And we find that in emotional... This is, of course, again, the starting point here is someone who's serious about spiritual life. If you're not serious about spiritual life, this conversation has no reference point. But for persons who are interested in liberation and they're interested in transcendence, spiritual life, Krishna consciousness, then for such serious persons, they figure out how to use their emotions in such a way that they assist the development of their Krishna consciousness. Right, you understand? So then, and then if an emotion is not very useful for the development of their Krishna consciousness, then they will remain stoic or neutral towards such an emotional state. Now, of course, doing so is much easier said than done. That would require the assistance of more experienced Vaishnavas, how to suss out the useful emotional states and the ones that are not so useful, and use the good ones for helping us develop our Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, it becomes, how you say, a roller coaster of up and down experiences. You know, sometimes the mind is in a good space, and then sometimes the mind is in a passionate space, sometimes the mind is in an ignorant state. So we give too much value to the emotional states without our service to Krishna, then how we'll develop our Krishna consciousness? Just like sometimes you have a service to Krishna and you don't want to do it. You just don't feel like doing it. You ever had that experience? Probably on a daily basis we have experience. Some service is there. You just, like, all of a sudden, mind is like, I just don't feel like doing it. It doesn't even have a good reason. I just don't feel like doing it. Just for no reason at all, I don't want to do it like that. So then if you give a lot of attention to that emotional state, then you don't do your service to Krishna. And that way, how your Krishna consciousness will develop. So there are a lot of such instances. Similarly, Arjuna is another case. He's giving a lot of importance to his emotional state right now. The emotion of fear and the potential grief that he's about to experience in the battlefield. And Krishna's trying to tell him to give more attention to his service to him, to Dharma, etc. Like that. So then we have to see how our emotions can be used in Krishna consciousness. And where they're not useful for the development of our Krishna consciousness, then it is useful to remain neutral towards such emotional states. And Krishna speaks a lot about this neutrality in Bhagavad Gita in terms of speaking of the self-realized person who's gaining wisdom. He's kind of just neutral towards certain such emotions. Is that a problem with one? Right.
I'm just speaking to you. That in your, you did not say that we should ignore our emotions. You were talking about an Aryan who recognizes what his emotional state is, but gives importance to the Vedic principles or the religious principle. Does not mean that you ignore your emotions. We're very clear. Oh, my emotions or whatever is saying me to do this or not do this. Mm. But this is what the instruction of Guru, Sadhu and Shastra is. I will do this. That's what you were...
Yeah.
You did not say we should ignore.
Yeah. So again, like I said, it's easier said than done. Because, especially in the age of Kali, where the emphasis is always about how do you feel? Do you feel good about that? I'm like, it's a spiritual life. Of course I don't feel good about it. But that's part of the development, you know. It's part of the sacrifice of developing our Krishna consciousness. There are many things we don't feel good about, per se. We acknowledge it, but we have to give preference to Krishna conscious development. Again, like I said, the starting point is who's serious about the goal of life. Those who are serious. Just like I'm sure when Jesus told his disciples to let the dead bury the dead and all these sorts of statements, I'm sure it didn't feel good. You know, imagine you want to bury your father and your guru says, let the dead bury the dead. I don't think that would be a wonderful experience to hear something like that. And yeah, he says, let the dead bury the dead and you follow me. And that's what many of his followers did, right? They gave preference to their guru or like that.
So it's obviously spiritual life is a challenge for this reason. This is one of the challenges of spiritual life, actually. Not giving higher importance to our feelings and giving higher importance to Krishna and to the service of Guru and so on. Anyway, so we'll meet with those challenges progressively. Okay, anything else? Oh, yeah.
You were saying that we're suffering from a poor fund of knowledge, but Prabhupada says we're also suffering from insufficient brain substance in Kali Yuga. So I can see that myself and a lot of people I come in contact with.
Yes.
And then Srila Prabhupada was encouraging people, well, what would you like to do for Krishna? Do you like doing this? And then as people progress, it's more like you're duty-bound, you know. So he has to, you know, encourage him in that way.
Yeah.
And then, is it pronounced Dhanvantari or?
Dhanvantari.
Dhanvantari. Dhanvantari. I always heard it that pronounced that way. I stand corrected. Thank you.
Okay, then. Thank you all very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
All those who identify with the male gender, we have meeting downstairs in the indoctrination room.